Ed, I guess. What makes you assume I'll be apologizing anyway? I click my tongue against the roof of my mouth while waiting for her response.
You're kidding, right? You owe her an apology, she says loudly. You need to at least tell her you'll go to Seattle with her.
I groan. I'm not going to Seattle, for fuck's sake. What is it with Tessa and fucking Tessa number two and pestering me over Seattle?
Well, then I hope she goes without you, she says curtly.
I look at her, this girl who I thought might understand. What did you say? I put the brandy glass down on the table quickly, sloshing brown liquid onto its white surface. Lillian arches one brow.
I said I hope she does go, because you tried to mess up her apartment deal and still aren't willing to move with her.
Good thing I don't give a fuck what you think. I stand to leave. I know she's right, but I'm over this bullshit.
Yes, you do. You just won't admit it. I have come to learn that the people who pretend to care the least actually care the most.
I pick the glass back up and finish it off before heading toward the door.
You don't know shit about me, I say through my teeth.
Lillian gets up and pads over to me casually.
Yes, I do. Like I said, you're just like Riley.
Well, I feel sorry for her because she has to put up... I begin to lash out at the girl, but stop myself. She hasn't done anything wrong. She's actually been trying to help me and doesn't deserve my anger. I sigh. Sorry, okay? I walk back into the living room, plopping myself back onto the couch.
See? Apologizing isn't so hard, is it?
Lillian smiles and goes over to the silver bar, bringing the brandy over to where I sit.
You obviously need another drink.
She smiles and grabs my empty glass. After my third glass, I mumble, Tessa hates when I drink.
Are you a mean drunk?
No, I say reflexively, but seeing that she's really interested, I ponder the question some more and reconsider. Sometimes. Why don't you drink? I ask.
I don't know. I just don't.
Does your boyf... I begin but correct myself. Girlfriend drink? She nods.
Yes, sometimes. Not as much as before.
Oh. This Riley and I may have more in common than I thought. Lillian! Her father calls out, and then I hear the staircase creak. I sit up and move away from her out of instinct, and she turns her attention to him.
Yes, father?
It's nearly one in the morning. I think it's time your company heads out, he says.
One in the morning? Holy shit.
Okay.
She nods and looks back to me.
He seems to forget I'm an adult,
she whispers, annoyance clear in her voice. I need to go anyway. Tessa's going to kill me, I gripe. When I stand, my legs aren't as steady under me as they should be.
You're welcome to come back tomorrow, Harden,
my father's friend says as I reach the door.
Just apologize and consider Seattle,
Lillian reminds me. But I'm determined to ignore her, and I walk out the door, down the steps, and onto the paved driveway. I would really love to know what her dad does for a living. He's obviously rich as fuck. It's pitch black out here. Literally, I can barely see my hand as I wave it idiotically in front of my face. When I reach the end of the driveway, the lights outside my father's cabin come into view, and they guide me to his driveway and up the porch steps. The screen door creaks when I open it, and I curse at it. The last thing I need is my father waking up and smelling the brandy on my breath. Then again, he may want some himself. My inner Tessa immediately scolds me for the cynical thought, and I pinch the bridge of my nose, shaking my head to get her out. I nearly knock over a lamp, trying to pull my boots off of my feet. I grip the corner of the wall to steady myself, and finally manage to place my boots next to Tessa's shoes. My palms begin to sweat as I take the staircase as slowly as possible. I'm not drunk, but I am quite buzzed, and I know she's going to be even more upset than she was before. She was downright cheesed the fuck off earlier, and now that I've stayed out this long and have been drinking, she's going to lose it. I'm actually a little afraid of her right now. She was so mad earlier, cursing at me and ordering me away. The door to the room we're sharing opens with a small squeak, and I try to be as quiet as possible and guide myself through the dark room without waking her. No such luck. The lamp on the nightstand switches on, and Tessa's impassive glare is focused on me.
"Sorry, I didn't want to wake you."
I apologize. A frown forms on her full lips.
"I wasn't asleep,"
she states, and my chest begins to tighten.
"I know it's late, I'm sorry,"
I say, my words running together. She squints.
"Have you been drinking?"
Despite her expression, her eyes are bright. The way the soft light of the lamp hits her face makes me want to reach across the bed and touch her.
"Yes,"
I say, and wait for the fury of my very own Lyssa. She sighs and brings her hands to her forehead to brush the loose tendrils that have escaped her ponytail. She doesn't seem to be alarmed or surprised by my state. 30 seconds later, I'm still waiting on the rage. But nothing. She's just sitting there on the bed, leaning back on her arms, staring at me with despondent eyes while I stand awkwardly in the center of the room.
"Are you going to say anything?"
I finally ask, hoping to break this haunting silence.
"No, I'm not."
"Huh?"
"I'm exhausted and you're drunk. There's really nothing for me to say,"
she says without emotion. I'm always nervously anticipating her to finally snap, to finally get to the point where she's tired of putting up with my shit. And honestly, I'm scared to fucking death that this may be it.
"I'm not drunk. I only had 3 drinks. You know that's not shit to me,"
I say and sit on the edge of the bed. A chill runs down my spine when she moves closer to the headboard to get away from me.
"Where were you?"
Her voice is soft. "Next door." She continues to stare at me, expecting more information.
"I was with this girl, Lillian. Her dad went to college with mine. We were talking. One thing led to another, and..."
"Oh, God."
Tessa's eyes snap shut, and her hands move to cover her ears as she pulls her knees up to her chest. I reach across, taking both her wrists in one hand and gently pushing them down to her lap.
"No, no, not like that. Fuck. We were talking about you,"
I tell her, then wait for her normal eye-rolling and signs of disbelief at anything I tell her. She opens her eyes and looks up.
"What about me?"
"Just this Seattle shit."
"You talk to her about Seattle, but you won't talk to me."
Tessa's voice isn't angry, just curious, and I'm really fucking confused. It's not like I wanted to talk to the girl. She practically fucking forced me. But in a way, I guess I'm sort of glad she did.
"It's not like that. You made me leave."
I remind the girl in front of me with Tessa's face, but none of her normal attitude.
"And you were with her this entire time."
Her lip trembles, and she presses her teeth into it.
"No, I went for a walk and ran into her."
I reach across to move her unruly hair away from her cheek, and she doesn't pull away. Her skin is hot to my touch, and her cheeks look as if they're glowing in the muted light. She leans into my palm, and her eyes flutter closed as I rub my thumb along her cheekbone. "She's a lot like you." This isn't how I expected this to go. I expected World War fucking Tessa by now.
"You like her, then?"
she asks, grey eyes opening slightly to meet mine.
"Yeah, she's okay."
I shrug, and she closes her eyes again. I'm thrown off by her calm behaviour
and that mixed with the aged brandy makes for one confused Harden.
"I'm tired," she says,
and reaches up to remove my hand from her cheek. "You're not mad?" I question. Something is nagging at the back of my mind, but it just won't surface. Fucking liquor.
"I'm just tired,"
she answers, and lies back against the pillows. Okay. Warning bells. No, fucking tornado sirens go off in my mind at the lack of emotion in her voice. There's something she's not saying, and I want her to just say it. But as she falls back asleep, or at least feigns it, and I realize I have to choose to ignore the silent signals for tonight. It's late. If I push her too hard, she'll make me leave again. And I can't have that. I can't sleep without her. And I'm thankful she's even fucking letting me near her after the shit with Sandra. I'm also thankful the liquor is making me so drowsy that I won't be up all night worrying about what's stewing inside of Tessa's brain.
Chapter 34. Tessa. The morning light sweeps over the room as the sun rises in the distance. My eyes move from the uncovered balcony doors to my stomach, where Harden's arm is draped over my body. His full lips are parted, soft purrs sounding from between them. I don't know whether I should shove him off the bed or brush his brown hair back from his forehead and press my lips against the reddened skin. I'm angry. So damn angry at Harden for everything that happened last night. He had the audacity to return to the cabin at 1:30 in the morning, and just like I feared, his breath was laced with liquor. Yet another strand in this tangled web. Then there's this girl, a girl like me, whom he spent hours upon hours with. He said they were just talking, and it's not that I don't believe that they were only talking. It's the fact that Harden refuses to discuss Seattle or anything remotely related to Seattle with me, but he seems to be able to talk to her. I don't know what to think, and I'm sick of thinking all the damn time. There's always some problem to fix, some argument to be gotten through, and I'm tired. Tired of all of it. I love Harden more than I can comprehend, but I don't know how much longer I can do this. I can't worry about him coming home drunk every time we have a problem. I wanted to scream at him, throw a pillow at his face, and tell him how big of a jerk he is. But I'm finally beginning to realize that you can only fight with someone over the same thing so many times before you're burned out. I don't know what to do about him not coming to Seattle, but I do know that lying here in this bed isn't of any help to me. I lift Harden's arm and wriggle out from under his weight, gently placing his arm across the pillow next to him. He groans in his slumber, but thankfully he only stirs and doesn't wake. I grab my phone from the bedside table and quietly pad to the balcony doors. They open with minimal noise, and I let out a relieved sigh before closing them behind me. The air is much cooler than yesterday. Granted, it's only 7 in the morning. Phone in hand, I begin to ponder my living situation in Seattle, which at this point is non-existent. My transfer to Seattle is becoming more of a hassle than I ever anticipated, and honestly, at times it seems more of a hassle than it's worth. I immediately scold myself for entertaining the thought. That's exactly what Harden is trying to do. He's trying to make it as difficult for me to move as he possibly can, hoping that I'll give up on doing what I want to do and stay with him. Well, that's just not going to happen. I open the browser on my phone and wait impatiently for Google to load. I stare at the small screen, waiting for the annoying circle to stop going round and round. Frustrated at the slow response on my ancient phone, I tread back into the bedroom and grab Harden's off of the chair, then go back out to the balcony. If he wakes up and finds me on his phone, he'll be angry, but I'm not going through his calls or texts. I'm only using his internet. Yeah, she's okay. His words about this Lillian girl play through my mind as I try to search for apartments in Seattle. I shake my head, disposing of the memory and instead admiring a luxury apartment that I wish I could afford. I scroll to the next, a smaller one-bedroom in a duplex. I don't feel comfortable in a duplex. I like the idea of someone having to go through a lobby to get to my door, especially since it appears that I'll be alone in Seattle. I swipe my finger across the screen a few more times before finally finding a one-bedroom in a mid-size high-rise. It's over my budget, but not by much. If I have to go without being able to buy groceries until I get settled in, I will. I enter the phone number into my phone and continue to browse through the listings. Impossible thoughts of searching for an apartment alongside Harden's haunt me. The two of us would be sitting on the bed, me cross-legged, Harden with his long legs stretched out in front of him and his back against the headboard. I would show him apartment after apartment, and he'd roll his eyes and complain about the process of apartment hunting, but I'd catch him smiling, with his eyes focused on my lips. He'd tell me how cute I am when I'm flustered before taking a laptop from me and assuring me he'd find the place for us. That would be too simple, though. Too easy. Everything in my life was simple and easy until 6 months ago. My mother helped me with my dorm, and I had everything sorted and in order before I even arrived at Washington Central. My mother. I can't help but miss her. She has no idea that I've reunited with my father. She'd be so angry if she knew. I know she would. Before I can talk myself out of it, I'm dialing her number.
Hello?
She answers smoothly. Mother? Who else would it be? I'm already regretting this phone call. How are you? I ask quietly. She sighs. I'm good. I've been a little busy with everything going on. Pots and pans clink in the background. What's going on? Does she know about my father? I quickly decide that if she doesn't, now isn't the time to tell her. Nothing specific, really. I've been working a lot of overtime, and we got a new pastor. Oh, and Ruth passed away. Ruth Porter? Yes, I was going to call you, she says, her cold voice warming slightly. Noah's grandmother Ruth was one of the sweetest women I've ever had the pleasure of meeting. She was always so kind, and next to Karen, she made the best chocolate chip cookies on the planet. How's Noah doing? I dare to ask. He was very close with his grandmother, and I know this has to be hard for him. I never had the chance to get close to any of my grandparents. My father's parents passed away before I was old enough to remember, and my mother's parents were not the type of people to allow anyone to get close to them. He's taking it pretty hard. You should call him, Tessa. I begin to tell her that I can't call him, but I stop myself. Why can't I call him? I can, and I will. I will. I'll call him right now.
Really?
The surprise is evident in her voice. Well, at least wait until after 9, she advises, and I can't help but smile at her tone. I know she's smiling on the other end of the line. How is school going? I'm leaving Monday for Seattle, I confess, and I hear something clatter to the ground.
What?
I told you, remember? I did, didn't I?
No, you didn't. You mentioned that your company was moving there, but you never told me that you were leaving for certain.
I'm sorry, I've just been so busy with Seattle and Harden. Her voice is incredibly controlled when she asks,
He's going with you?
I don't know. I sigh.
Are you okay? You sound upset.
I'm okay. I lie.
I know we haven't been on the best of terms lately, but I'm still your mother, Tessa. You can talk to me if something is going on in your life.
I'm fine, really. I'm just stressed over this move and transferring to a new campus.
Oh, that? You'll do great there. You'd excel at any campus.
You can excel anywhere, she says with assurance. I know, but I'm already so used to this campus, and I got to know a few of the professors, and I have friends. A few friends. I don't really have friends that I will miss terribly, save Landon, and maybe Steph, but mostly only Landon.
Tessa, this is what we've been working toward for years, and look at you now. In such a short period of time, you've accomplished it. You should be proud of yourself.
I'm surprised by her words, and my mind rushes to process them. Thank you, I mutter.
Tell me as soon as you move into your place in Seattle so I can come visit, since you obviously won't be coming home any time soon, she says.
I will. I ignore her harsh tone.
I'll have to call you back. I have to get ready for work. Make sure you don't forget to call Noah.
I know, I'm going to call him in a couple hours. As I hang up, a movement on the balcony catches my attention, and I look up to see Harden. He's dressed now, in his normal black t-shirt and black jeans. His feet are bare, and his eyes are focused on me.
Who is that?
He asks. My mother, I respond, and pull my knees up to my chest in the chair.
Why did she call?
He grabs the back of the empty chair and it squeaks as he pulls it closer to me before sitting down. I called her, I answer without looking at him.
Why is my phone out here?
He grabs it from my lap and scans it. I was using the internet.
Oh.
He says as if he doesn't believe me. If he doesn't have anything to hide, why would he care?
Who were you talking about when you said you were going to call him?
He asks, sitting on the edge of the hot tub. I look over at him. Noah? I respond dryly. His eyes narrow.
Like hell you are.
Well, I am.
Why do you need to talk to him?
He places his hands on his knees and leans forward.
You don't.
So you can spend hours with someone else and come back drunk, but...
He's your ex-boyfriend.
He interrupts. And how do I know she isn't one of your ex-girlfriends?
Because I don't have any ex-girlfriends, remember?
I huff in frustration. My earlier resolve has now faded and I'm getting angry again. Okay, all the girls you fucked around with, then. In any case, I continue, my voice low and clear, you don't get to tell me who I am allowed to call, ex-boyfriend or not.
I thought you weren't mad at me.
I sigh, staring out onto the water and away from his piercing green eyes. I'm not. I'm really not. You did exactly what I expected you to do.
Which was?
Running off for hours, then returning with liquor on your breath.
You told me to leave.
That doesn't make it okay that you came back drunk.
And here it is.
He groans.
I knew you wouldn't stay quiet like you did last night.
Stay quiet? See, that's your problem. You expect me to stay quiet. I'm over it.
Over what?
He leans toward me, his face too close to mine. This! I wave my hand dramatically and rise to my feet. I'm just over all of it. You go ahead and do whatever the hell you want, but you can find someone else to sit here beside you and not take note of your antics and remain quiet, because I'm not doing it anymore. I turn away from him. He jumps to his feet and hooks his fingers around my arm to gently pull me back.
Stop,
he orders. One large hand spreads across my waist while the other goes to my arm. I think about twisting free, but then he pulls me to his chest.
Stop fighting me. You're not going anywhere.
His lips press into a hard line as I pull my arm from his grasp. Let me go and I'll sit down, I huff. I don't want to give in, but I also refuse to ruin anyone else's time on this trip. If I go downstairs, Harden will surely follow, and we'll end up staging a big blowout in front of his family. He swiftly lets go of me, and I plop myself into the chair again. He sits back down across from me and stares at me expectantly with his elbows on his thighs. What? I snap.
So you're leaving me then?
He whispers, which softens my harsh demeanor a little. If you mean leaving to Seattle, yes.
Monday?
Yes, Monday. I've gone over this with you again and again. I know you thought that little stunt you pulled would discourage me, I say, seething, but it didn't, and nothing you can do will.
Nothing?
He looks up at me through his thick lashes. I'll marry you, he told me while he was drunk. Does he mean it now? As much as I want to ask him right here, right now, I can't. I don't think I'm ready for his sober answer. Harden, what is it in Seattle that you're so eager to avoid? I ask instead. His eyes dart away from mine.
Nothing important.
Harden, I swear, if there's something that you've kept from me, I will never speak to you again, I say, and mean it. I've had enough of this shit, honestly.
It's nothing, Tessa. I have some old friends there that I don't particularly care for because they're part of my old life.
Old life?
My life before you. The drinking, the parties, fucking every girl that passed my way,
he says. When I cringe, he mumbles,
sorry,
but continues.
There's no big secret, just bad memories. But that's not why I don't want to go anyway.
I wait for him to get to the heart of the matter, but he doesn't say anything else. Okay, then tell me why, because I don't get it. His voice is devoid of any emotion as he looks into my eyes.
Why do you need an explanation? I don't want to go, and I don't want you to go without me.
Well, that's not enough of an explanation. I'm going, I say, and shake my head. And you know what? I don't want you to come with me anymore.
What?
His eyes darken. I don't want you to come. I stay as calm as possible and stand up from the chair. I'm proud of myself for having this discussion without yelling. You've tried to ruin this for me. This has been my dream since I can remember, and you tried to ruin it for me. You've turned something that I should be looking forward to into something that I can barely stand. I should be excited and ready to go meet my dreams. But instead, you've made sure I have nowhere to live and no support system at all. So no, I don't want you to go. His mouth opens and closes before he stands and paces across the wooden deck.
You,
he begins, but then stops himself, looking like he's reconsidering his thoughts. But being hardened, things never change, and he chooses the harder, uglier path instead.
You know what, Tessa? No one gives a fuck about Seattle except someone like you. Who the hell grows up planning on moving to Seattle fucking Washington? Real ambitious.
He growls. He takes in a deep, violent breath.
And in case you forgot, I'm the only reason you have that opportunity to begin with. You think anyone else is getting a paid fucking internship as a freshman in college? Fuck no. Most people struggle to get a paid internship even after they graduate.
That's not even close to the fucking point here. I roll my eyes at him and the nerve he has.
Then what is the point, you ungrateful?
I take a step toward him and my hand flies at him before I really register what I'm doing. But Harden's too quick and grabs me by the wrist, stopping me only inches from his cheek.
Don't,
he warns. His voice is rough, laced with anger, and I wish he hadn't stopped me from slapping him. His minty breath fans across my cheeks as he tries to control his temper. Bring it on, Harden, my thoughts challenge. I'm not intimidated by his harsh breathing or his foul words. I can give them back to him in spades. You don't get to talk to people like that without consequences. My words come out low, threatening even.
Consequences?
He stares down at me with burning eyes.
I've known nothing in my life but consequences.
I hate the way he's taking credit for my internship. I hate the way he pushes when I pull, and I push when he pulls. I hate the way he drives my anger to grow so strong that I would try to slap him. And I hate the way I feel as if I'm losing control of something I'm not sure I've ever held. I look up at him, his hand still holding my wrist, using only enough pressure to keep me from attempting to slap him again, and he looks hurt, in a dangerous way. There's a challenge behind his eyes that makes my stomach turn. He brings my hand to his chest, his eyes never leaving mine, and says,
"You know nothing of consequences."
Then he walks away from me, that look still in his eyes, and my hand drops down to my side.
Chapter 35. Harden.
Who the fuck does she think she is? She thinks just because I don't want to go to Seattle with her that she can say shit like this to me. She doesn't want me to fucking go. She fucking uninvited me to Seattle, and she's the one trying to slap me. I don't fucking think so. I was only seeing red as I spoke, and her trying to hit me surprised me. A lot. I left her with wide eyes, her pupils blown in rage. But I had to get as far from that bullshit as I could. I find myself at the small coffee shop in town. The coffee tastes like tar, and the weird-ass muffin I got is even worse. I hate this bullshit small town and its lack of every goddamn thing. I tear 3 sugar packets at once and dump them into the disgusting coffee, stirring it with a plastic spoon. It's too early for this shit.
Good morning,
a familiar voice greets. Not the voice I wanted to hear, though. Why are you here? I roll my eyes and ask Lillian as she comes around from behind me.
Well, you obviously aren't a morning person,
she says saccharinely and takes the seat in front of me. Go away, I huff and look around the small cafe. A line has formed nearly to the door, and almost all of the tables are full. I should probably do everyone in line a favor and tell them to find a fucking Starbucks, because this place blows. She eyes me.
You didn't apologize, did you?
God,
You are so damn nosy.
I pinch the bridge of my nose, and she smiles.
Are you going to finish that?
She gestures to the rock-hard muffin in front of me. I slide it over to her, and she tears off a piece. I wouldn't eat that, I warn, but she does anyway.
It's not that bad,
she lies. I can tell she wants to spit it out, but instead she swallows it down.
So, are you going to tell me why you didn't apologize to Tamara?
Her fucking name is Tessa. If you call her...
Whoa, calm down. Joke, joke. I was just messing with you.
She giggles, proud of her annoying self. Ha, ha. I down the rest of my coffee.
Anyway, why didn't you?
I don't know.
Yes, you do,
she presses. Why do you care, anyway? I lean toward her, and she sits back in the chair.
I don't know. Because you seem to love her, and you're my friend.
Your friend? I don't even know you, and you sure as hell don't know me, I declare. Her neutral expression falters for a moment, and she blinks her eyes slowly. If she cries, I'm going to punch someone. I can't handle this much drama this early in the fucking morning. Look, you're cool and all, but this... I gesture back and forth between her body and mine. Isn't a friendship. I don't have friendships. She tilts her head to the side.
You don't have any friends? Not even one?
No. I have people I party with, and Tessa.
You should have friends. At least one.
What would be the point of you and me being friends? We're only here until tomorrow afternoon. She shrugs.
We could be friends until then.
You obviously don't have any friends either.
Not many. Riley doesn't seem to like them.
And why does that matter?
Because I don't want to start a fight with her, so I just don't hang out with them much.
Sorry, but Riley sounds like a bitch.
Don't say that about her.
Lillian's cheeks flush, and for the first time since I met her, she's exhibiting an emotion besides calmness or omniscience. I play with my cup smoothly, kind of glad to get a rise out of her. Just saying. I wouldn't let someone tell me who I can and can't be friends with.
So you're telling me that Tessa has friends she hangs out with besides you?
She raises her brow, and I look away to think about her question. She has friends. She has Landon. Yes.
You don't count.
No, not me. Landon.
Landon is your stepbrother. He doesn't count.
Steph is sort of Tessa's friend, but not really. And Zed, not a problem anymore. She has me, I say. She smirks.
That's exactly what I thought.
What does it matter? Once we get away from here and start over, she can make new friends. We can make new friends together.
Sure. The problem is that you aren't going to the same place,
she reminds me.
She'll come with me.
I know it doesn't seem like it, but you don't know her. I do, and I know she can't live without me. Lillian looks up at me with thoughtful eyes.
You know, there's a big difference between not being able to live without someone and loving them. This chick doesn't even know what she's talking about.
She makes no sense. I don't want to talk about her anymore. If we're going to be friends, I need to know about you and Regan.
Riley,
she says sharply. I chuckle lightly. Annoying, isn't it? Lillian glowers playfully at me, but then tells me all about how she met her girlfriend. They were partnered up together for Lillian's freshman orientation. Riley had been rude at first, but later made a move on her, surprising both of them. Apparently, this Riley has a jealous streak and a temper. Sounds familiar.
Most of our fights stem from her jealousy. She's always afraid that I'll stray from her. I don't know why, because she's the one always getting attention from everyone, male and female. And she's dated both.
She sighs.
so it's sort of like everyone's fair game.
You haven't?
No, I've never dated a guy.
She crinkles her nose.
Well, once in eighth grade, because I felt like I had to, my friends were hassling me for never having a boyfriend.
Why didn't you just tell them? I ask her.
It's not that simple.
It should be. She smiles.
Yes, it should be, but it's not. Anyway, I've never dated anyone except Riley and one other girl.
Then her smile disappears.
Riley's dated a lot.
The rest of my morning and the entire afternoon is spent this way, listening to this girl's problems. I don't mind as much as I thought, though. It's nice to know I'm not the only one with these types of issues. Lillian reminds me a lot of Tessa and Landon. If they were morphed into one person, it would certainly be Lillian. I hate to admit it, but I don't mind her company too much. She's an outsider, like me, but she doesn't judge me, because she barely knows me. Strangers come and go, in and out of the coffee shop, and each time a blonde steps in, I can't help but look up, hoping it will be my blonde stranger. A funny little tune starts to play.
That would be my dad calling,
Lillian says and looks down at her phone.
Shit, it's almost five,
she says, panicked.
We need to go. Well, I need to go. I still don't have anything to wear tonight.
For what? I ask her when she stands up.
Dinner. You knew we were going to dinner with your parents, didn't you?
Karen isn't my... I begin, but decide to let it go. She knows. I get up and follow her down the block to a small clothing store filled with colourful dresses and gaudy jewellery. It smells like mothballs and salt water.
There's nothing to choose from,
she groans, holding up a bright pink frilly dress. That's hideous, I tell her, and she nods, hanging it back up. I can't help but think of what Tessa is doing right now. Is she wondering where I am? I'm sure she assumes that I'm with Lillian, which is true, but she doesn't have anything to worry about. She knows this. Wait. No, she doesn't. I haven't told her about Lillian's girlfriend. Tessa doesn't know you're gay, I blurt as she shows me a black beaded dress. She looks at me smoothly and just sweeps her hand across the dress again, kind of like she did with the brandy bottle last night. I'm not giving you fashion advice here, so stop trying, I groan. She rolls her eyes.
So why didn't you tell her?
I poke at this feather necklace thing. I don't know. I didn't think about it.
Well, I'm oh so flattered that my orientation was so unnotable to you,
she says with feigned gratitude and a spread hand at her neck.
But you really should tell her.
She smiles.
No wonder she almost backhanded you.
I knew I shouldn't have told her about the slap.
Shut up.
I'll tell her. Although it might work in my favour not to, actually. Maybe, I add. Lillian rolls her eyes again. She rolls her eyes almost as much as Tessa does. She's difficult, and I know what I'm doing, okay? I think I do, at least. I know exactly how to push her buttons to get what I want.
You need to dress up tonight. The place we're going is disgustingly fancy.
She warns me while eyeing the dress with a twist of the hanger. Hell no, I'm not. What makes you think I'm going anyway?
Why not? You want to make the missus a little less pissed off, don't you?
The sound of her words throws me off for a moment. The missus? Don't call her that. She slaps a white button up against my chest.
Just wear a nice shirt, at least. Otherwise, my dad will give you shit about it all night,
she says and steps into the dressing room. A few minutes later, she comes out in the black dress. It looks good on her. She's hot and all, but I immediately start fantasizing about how Tessa would look in it. It would be much tighter. Tessa's boobs are much bigger than Lillian's. Tessa's hips are a little wider, so she would fill the dress much better. It's not as ugly as the rest of the shit in here, I half compliment. And she closes the curtain with yet another eye roll and a middle finger.
Chapter 36. Tessa. I stare into the long mirror and ask Landon, are you sure this looks okay?
Yes, it's fine, he says with a smile. Can we try to remember that I'm a guy, though?
I sigh, then chuckle. I know, I'm sorry. It's not my fault you're my only friend. The dark, sparkly dress feels odd against my skin. The material is hard, and the small beads scratch me a little when I move. The small clothing boutique in town didn't have much to choose from, and I surely wasn't going to pick the hot pink dress made entirely of tulle. I need something to wear to this dreaded dinner tonight, and Harden's suggestion that I wear jeans isn't going to work. Do you think he'll even come back before it's time to leave? I ask Landon. Harden took off, as always, after our fight, and hasn't been back since. He hasn't called or texted either. He's probably with the mystery girl with whom he loves to discuss our problems. You know, the girl he can talk to better than he can talk to his own girlfriend. In his anger, I wouldn't be surprised if he did something with her to spite me. No, he wouldn't.
I don't know, honestly,
Landon says.
I hope he does. My mom will be disappointed if he doesn't.
Yeah. I push another pin into my bun and grab my mascara off the bathroom counter.
He'll come around. He's just stubborn.
I don't know if we will, though. I sweep the small brush across my lashes. I'm reaching my breaking point. I can feel it. You know what I felt last night when he told me he was with another girl?
What?
He stares blankly at me. I think this is just the end of the turbulent love story. I try to make a joke, but it falls flat.
It's weird hearing you say that. You of all people.
He says.
How are you feeling?
A little angry, but that's it. It's like I'm numb to it now, to all of it. I just don't have it in me to keep doing this over and over. I'm beginning to think he's a lost cause, and that breaks my heart, I say, forbidding myself from crying.
Nobody's a lost cause. They just think they are, so they don't even bother to try sometimes.
Are you guys ready? Karen's voice calls from the living room, and Landon assures her that we'll be down any minute. I slide on my new pair of black heels with straps at the ankles. Unfortunately, they're as uncomfortable as they look. It's times like this that I miss wearing Toms every day. Harden still hasn't returned by the time we pile into the car.
We can't wait any longer,
Ken says through a disappointed frown. It's fine. We can bring him something back, Karen sweetly offers, knowing that's not the solution but trying her best to calm her husband's irritation. Landon looks over at me, and I offer a smile to assure him that I'm fine. He tries to distract me the whole drive, talking about various students we know, making little jokes about how they are in class, especially some of the ones in the religion course. As Ken pulls up to our destination, I see that the restaurant is exquisite. The building is a massive log cabin, big enough to be a lodge, and the inside contradicts the woodsy feel of the exterior. It's modern and sleek, black and white everywhere, with gray accents along the walls and floor. The lighting is right on the verge of being too dark, but it adds to the atmosphere. Unexpectedly, my dress is the brightest thing in the room. When the light hits the glittering beads, they shine like diamonds in the dark, which everyone seems to notice.
Scott,
I hear Ken tell the beautiful woman behind the rostrum. The rest of your party is already here. She smiles, her perfect white teeth nearly to the point of blinding. Party? I turn to Landon, and he shrugs. We follow the woman to a table in the corner of the room. I hate the way everyone seems to be staring at me because of this dress. I should have gone with the hot pink monstrosity. It would have attracted less attention. A middle-aged man knocks over his drink as we walk by, and Landon pulls me closer to his side as we pass the creep. The dress isn't inappropriate. It rests just above my knees. The problem is that it was made for someone with a much smaller bust than me, causing the built-in bra to act as a push-up, giving me maximum cleavage.
It's about time you joined us,
an unfamiliar male voice says, and I peer around Karen to look for the source. A man, who I assume is Ken's friend, stands to shake his hand. My eyes move to his right, where his wife is, smiling, greeting Karen. Next to her is a young girl. The girl, I sense on instinct, and my stomach drops. She's beautiful. extremely beautiful. And she's wearing the exact same dress as I am. Of course. I can see the bright blue of her eyes from here, and when she smiles at me, she's even more beautiful. I'm so distracted by my growing jealousy that I almost fail to notice that Hardin is sitting right next to her, dressed in a white button-down shirt.
Chapter 37. Hardin.
Oh, my God!
Lillian whispers loudly. I'm broken from my thoughts of my earlier fight with Tessa, and look up to see what she's gaping at. Tessa. In a dress. That fucking dress that I was imagining her in. And it makes her already big chest look... fuck. I blink rapidly, trying to collect myself before she reaches the table. For a moment, I'm convinced that I'm hallucinating. It looks even sexier than I imagined. Every guy she passes turns to look at her. One even knocks over his drink. I grip the edge of the table, waiting for the asshole to speak to her. If he does, I swear to fuck. That's Tessa? Oh my God. Lillian is practically panting. Stop staring at her, I warn, and she laughs. The man who knocked over his drink leans away from his wife as his eyes follow my girl.
Chill,
Lillian says, gently touching my hands. My scarred knuckles are now white from my tight grip on the table. Landon pulls Tessa close to him and away from the married asshole. She smiles up at him, and he pulls her even closer as they walk.
What the fuck was that?
Tessa stands behind Landon as Lillian's parents and Karen and Ken go through the normal, I'm so fucking classy because I shake your hand, even though I saw you last night, shit. Before I know it, Tessa's eyes find Lillian, and they widen and lower. She's jealous. Good. I was hoping she'd be.
Chapter 38. Tessa. Panic courses through me at the sight of Hardin sitting next to this girl. He doesn't even acknowledge my presence as I take the seat next to Landon on the other side of the table from him.
Hello, and who might you be?
Ken's friend asks with a smile. I can tell by his tone that he's one of those men that think they are better than everyone else in the room. Hi, I'm Tessa, I say, then smile curtly and nod. Landon's friend. My eyes dart to Hardin, whose lips press into a thin line. Well, he's clearly entertaining the man's daughter, so why ruin their fun?
It's great to meet you, Tessa. I'm Max, and this is Denise.
He gestures to the woman beside him. It's nice to meet you, Denise says. The two of you are an adorable couple. Hardin starts coughing, or choking. I don't want to look at him and see which, but I can't help it. When I do, his eyes are narrow, glaring at me. Landon laughs.
Oh, we aren't together.
He looks at Hardin like he expects him to say something. Of course he doesn't. The girl looks slightly lost and a little uncomfortable. Good. Hardin leans into her and says something into her ear, and she smiles at him before shaking her head. What the hell is happening? I'm Lillian. It's nice to meet you. She introduces herself with a friendly smile. Bitch. You too, I manage to say in return. My heart is hammering in my chest, and I can barely see straight. If we weren't at the table with Hardin's family and Ken's friends, I would throw a drink in Hardin's face, and with his eyes stinging, he wouldn't have a chance to stop me from slapping him this time. A menu is placed in front of each of us, and I wait as one of the empty glasses in front of me is filled with water. Ken and Max begin to talk about the oddness of having to choose between tap and bottled water.
Do you know what you want?
Landon asks quietly a few moments later. I know he's trying to distract me from Hardin and his new friend. I don't know, I whisper, and look over the fancy handwritten menu. I can't imagine eating right now. My stomach won't stop turning, and I can't seem to control my breathing.
Do you want to go?
He says into my ear. I glance across the table at Hardin, whose eyes meet mine before he turns back to Lillian. Yes, I want to get the hell out of here and tell Hardin to never speak to me again. No. I'm not going anywhere, I say, and sit up higher, straightening my back against the chair.
good.
Landon praises me as a handsome server arrives at our table.
We'll have a bottle of your best white wine,
Ken's friend tells him, and he nods. Just as he begins to walk away, Max calls after him.
We weren't finished yet,
he says. Max orders a list of appetizers. I've never heard of any of the dishes he's chosen, but I don't suspect I'll be eating much of them anyway. I try desperately not to look across the table at Harden, but it's hard. So damn hard. Why would he come here with her? He's dressed up, too. If he doesn't have jeans on under the table, I think what's left of my heart will shatter. It takes me an hour of begging to get Harden dressed in anything other than black jeans and a t-shirt, yet here he is next to this girl in a white button-down.
I'll give you a few minutes to look over the menu, and if you have any questions about the dishes, my name is Robert,
the server says. His eyes meet mine, and his mouth opens slightly before he looks away quickly, only to look back at me. It's this dress and the damn cleavage. I offer a small, awkward smile, and he returns it, red creeping up his neck and spreading to his cheeks. I expect him to look at Harden, but then I remember that, due to the way we're seated, it's Landon and I that look like a couple, and Harden's with Lillian. My stomach flips again.
Hey, man, take our order or go,
Harden says, interrupting my thoughts.
Sorry.
Robert stammers and leaves the table in haste. All eyes move to Harden, mostly showing disapproval of his behavior. Karen looks embarrassed. Ken, too.
Don't worry. He'll be back. It's his job,
Max says with a shrug. He would think Harden's behavior was acceptable. I scowl at Harden, but he doesn't seem to care. He's too infatuated by those damn blue eyes. As I watch him with her, I feel like he's a stranger to me, as if I'm intruding on some private moment shared between a loving couple. The thought causes bile to rise in my throat. I swallow it down, and I'm thankful when the server, Robert, returns with the wine and ice buckets, this time bringing another server along, likely for moral support. Or protection. Harden watches him the entire time, and I roll my eyes at his audacity, glaring at the poor guy when here he is, acting as if he doesn't know me at all. Nervously, Robert fills my glass to the brim, and I quietly thank him. He smiles less shyly this time and moves to fill Landon's. I've never seen Landon drink except at Ken and Karen's wedding, and even then he only had one glass of champagne. If I wasn't so distraught over Harden's behavior, I'd turn down the wine and not drink in front of Ken and Karen, but I've had a long day, and without the wine, I don't think I'll be able to make it through this dinner. Ken covers the top of his glass and says,
No, thank you,
when Robert comes his way. I look up at Harden to make sure he isn't readying a snide remark about his father, but once again he's talking quietly to Lillian. I'm so confused right now. Why is he doing this? Yes, we were fighting, but this is too much. Taking a big sip, I find that the wine is cool and crisp and deliciously sweet on my tongue. I'm tempted to just gulp it all down, but I have to pace myself. The last thing I need is to get drunk and emotional in front of everyone. Harden doesn't decline the wine, but Lillian does. He rolls his eyes at her, teasing her, and I force my eyes away from them before I turn into a puddle of tears on the beautifully stained hardwood floor.
Max was scaling the wall. He was so drunk that he had to be pulled down by campus security,
Ken says, and everyone at our table laughs. Everyone except Harden, of course. I twirl my fork around my pasta and take another bite. I focus on how delicious the freshly made noodles are, and how they look wound around the tines of the fork. Otherwise, I'd have to focus on Harden.
I think you have an admirer, Denise says to me.
I look up and follow her eyes to Robert, who is clearing the dishes from the table beside us, his eyes on me.
Don't pay him too much attention. Just a waiter wanting what he can't have,
Max states with a sly smile, surprising me with his callousness.
Dad?
Lillian glares at her father, but he just gives her a smile before cutting into his steak.
Sorry, sweetie. I'm only stating the truth. A girl as beautiful as Tessa here shouldn't be looking at anyone working in hospitality.
If only he'd stopped there. But oblivious, or immune to, our discomfort, Max continues his degrading remarks until I finally drop my fork onto my plate with a clatter.
Don't,
Harden says to me, speaking to me for the first time since I arrived. Shocked, I look at him, then back to Max, weighing my options. He's being a jerk, and I've had almost an entire glass of wine. I should probably keep my mouth shut, like Hardin said. You can't talk about people like that. Lillian looks at her father, and he shrugs.
Fine, fine,
he grumbles, waving his knife a little and chewing on his steak.
Far be it from me to upset anyone.
Beside him, his wife looks embarrassed as she wipes the corners of her mouth with a cloth napkin. I'm going to need more wine, I tell Landon, and he smiles, sliding his half-empty glass over to me. I smile at the gesture. I'll wait for Robert to come back to the table. Thank you, though. I can feel Hardin's eyes on me as I search the restaurant. I don't see the server's blonde hair, so I reach over, grab the bottle myself, and fill my glass. I half expect Max to make a comment about my manners, but he refrains. Hardin is staring coolly across the room, and Lillian is talking to her mother. I'm in my own world, a hallucination in which Hardin is sitting next to me, his hand on my thigh, and he leans in to make some cheeky comment that makes me laugh and blush feverishly. My head is a little fuzzy as I clear all of the food off my plate and finish off my second glass of wine. Landon is in conversation with Max and Ken about sports, of course. I stare at the printed tablecloth, trying to find faces or pictures inside the black and white swirls. I find a cluster that resembles an H, and my finger traces the pattern repeatedly. Suddenly, I stop and look up quickly, paranoid that he may have seen me tracing the letter. But Hardin isn't paying attention to me. His eyes are only for her. I need some air, I tell Landon, and stand. My chair screeches against the wooden floor, and Hardin looks up from his conversation momentarily, but then he catches himself and pretends to have only been looking for his water before he returns to talking to this new girl of his. Chapter 39. Tessa. My heels clacking loudly on the hard wood, I concentrate on making it to the back door of the restaurant through my alcohol haze. If we were closer to home, I'd leave right now, pack my bags for Seattle, and stay in a hotel until I found an apartment. I am so sick of Hardin doing this kind of shit to me. It's painful and embarrassing, and it's breaking me down. He's breaking me down, and he knows it. That's exactly why he's doing it. He's said as much before. He does these things because he knows they'll get to me. When I push through the door, briefly hoping it won't set off an alarm or something, the chill night air envelops me. It's calming, blanketing me in something other than the stale air and awkward tension of dull dinner companions. I rest my elbows on a rock ledge and look out into the woods. It's dark, nearly pitch black out there. The restaurant is nestled right in the middle of a wooded area, creating a secluded atmosphere. It works and would be wonderful, but it's not ideal for me right now when I already feel trapped.
Are you all right?
A voice sounds from behind me. When I turn, Robert is standing in the doorway, a stack of plates in one hand. Yeah, I just needed to breathe, I say.
Oh, it's a little cold out here.
He smiles. His smile is polite and actually very endearing. I give a smile back. Yeah, a little. Both of us stand in silence. It's slightly awkward, but I don't mind. Nothing is as awkward as sitting at that table. A few seconds later, he speaks up.
I haven't seen you around here before.
He gently places the plates on an empty table and walks closer to me. He leans his elbows on the ledge only a few feet away. I'm visiting. I've never been here before.
You should visit in the summer. February is the worst time to come. Well, except for November and December. Maybe even January.
His cheeks flush as he stammers,
You get what I mean.
Then he lets out a little chuckle-like sound. Trying not to giggle at him and his red cheeks, I say, I bet it's beautiful in the summer.
Yeah, you are.
His eyes widen.
I mean, it is. It is beautiful.
He corrects himself and runs his hand over his face. I force my lips together in an attempt not to laugh at him, but I can't help it. A small giggle escapes, causing him to look even more horrified than before. Do you live here? I ask, trying to sidestep his embarrassment. His company is refreshing. It's nice to be around someone who's not so intimidating. Hardin owns every room he's in, and his presence is overwhelming half the time. That calms him a tiny bit.
Yeah, born and raised. And you?
I go to WCU. I'll be starting at the Seattle campus next week. I feel like I've been waiting so long to say those words.
Wow, Seattle. Impressive.